I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. This guest needs no introduction. Dr. Mark Hyman is the founder and director of the Ultra Wellness Center, the head of strategy and innovation of the Cleveland Clinic for Functional Medicine, a 14-time New York Times best-selling author, and board president for clinical affairs for the Institute of Functional Medicine. His previous books include Food, What the Heck Should I Eat? Eat Fat, Get Thin, The Blood Sugar Solution, and Food Fix, How to Save Our Health, Our Economy, Our Communities, and Our Planet, one bite at a time. Dr. Hyman's latest book is The Pegan Diet, 21 Practical Principles for Reclaiming Your Health in a Nutritionally Confusing World. And isn't it confusing? Well, Dr. Mark Hyman is here to clear things up. Mark, it's so good to see you. Thank you so much for joining.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
The most famous functional nutrition MD out there. And I love all your books so much. And I'm really excited to dive into the Pegan Diet.
Thank you. Thank you. It was really a work of love for me, because I realized a lot of my books are very dense and complicated. But the truth is that we need a simple set of principles to guide us that are not basic dogma, but that are guardrails for keeping us healthy and eating in a way that actually supports our health.
Absolutely.
That's really why I wrote it.
I love it. Well, I remember we were at the Mind Body Green Conference and you were throwing around the word pegan. So when I saw the cover of this book, I was so excited to dive in and share this with my audience. I think it's a brilliant term, but obviously it's a combination of paleo and vegan. So why combine these two diets that seem so opposite?
Well, it was kind of a spoof, right? Because you know, basically one doctor was this vegan cardiologist who was very vehement about his perspective. And then there was a paleo doctor and they were arguing. And I was like, you know, if you're paleo, you're vegan, I must be pegan. It was just a total joke. But then I thought about it. I was like, wait a minute. They're actually way more in common with each other than they do with the traditional American diet. You know, they all agree that we should be eating whole foods and real food and cutting out processed food and sugar and artificial ingredients, that we should really be eating more fruits and vegetables and more nuts and seeds and more good fats. And we should get rid of all that junk. The only difference is basically where you get your protein, animals or greens and beans. Otherwise, they're identical. They both even agree we shouldn't eat dairy. And so I was like, wait a minute, they're way more in common with each other. And I thought, all these diet wars are so stupid. Now, everybody who's trying to improve their diet by changing this or that is actually trying to do something good, right? Is actually trying to upgrade their health. And the real enemy is not all those different perspectives. It's the standard American diet, which is so full of junk and processed food, 60% ultra processed food, which is killing us all. Every 10% of your diet that's ultra processed food makes your death risk go up by 14%. And 60% of our diet is ultra processed food. So you do the math. It's not good. So basically, the idea was to create a set of principles that are flexible, inclusive, that are not dogmatic, that allow people to focus on quality of the food they're eating, to focus on food as medicine, and to focus on the idea of personalization, that we're all different and we need to figure out what works for us. And within that, there's a big umbrella and a big tent where everybody can find a place and we can figure out what's good for you. And I always say people should not let their dogma or their ideology trample over their biology. What I mean by that is we think, I'm going to be a vegan because I believe it's good for me and the planet. Well, one, maybe the whole story isn't that it's great for the planet, although it's not terrible for the planet. It may not be as good as, for example, as regenerative agriculture. But on the other hand, like, you know, you may thrive on a vegan diet. A guy like Rich Roll does great. He runs, you know, ultra marathons. Other people may not, and they lose muscle and they feel tired and weak and they get infertile and they have all these health issues. So you have to pay attention to what works for you and what doesn't, and don't let your beliefs kind of run over your biology.
I love that. You're bringing the best of vegan and, or the best of paleo and the best of vegan and pulling them together and having us, instead of this massive divide based on your lifestyle diet, bringing people together for the good. What are some examples of food that is creating health on both sides of the coin?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. When I wrote the book, I spent a lot of time writing this first section, which basically all got cut out. Most of it got cut out. It's a little bit in one of the early chapters, but essentially it was trying to explain to people how food interacts with our biology. They say, oh, I'm going to eat healthy to get healthy, or I'm going to eat better to lose weight. And those are very general. But we know in very specific detail how food regulates each of our body's biological systems. And in the first section of the book, I literally, how does food regulate your gut and your immune system and your energy system and your detox system and your hormones and your body, what you're made out of? All those things are important to think about, because when you understand food is not just calories, it's actually information, then you can upgrade the quality of your information you're consuming and the quality of your health. So an example would be, if you are, you know, typical American, you have low levels of this bacteria called Akkermansia in your gut. The other name for it is Akkermansia mucinophilia, which essentially is a big word, but it means that it's a bacteria that provides a mucus layer on the inside of your gut to prevent a leaky gut, to prevent the inflammation that happens if your gut's damaged and you leak in proteins from food or bacteria. And this is such an important bacteria, but a lot of us are very low in it because of antibiotics, because of our diet and so forth. Well, it turns out these bacteria love to eat certain polyphenols, pomegranate, green tea, cranberry. So who knew, right? So you can literally change people's lives by feeding them the phytochemicals to increase this bacteria, particularly in the case of cancer. And we know that if you have low levels of this bacteria and you want one of these new cancer treatments, it's called a checkpoint inhibitor or immunotherapy, that you cannot get this new form of therapy to work unless you have adequate levels of this bacteria. So it's this amazing communication between your gut bacteria, your immune system, the food you're eating, your risk of cancer, and so forth. So this is one example. Let's take another example. If you want to look at your immune system, which we're all worried about now, a lot of the food we're eating is suppressing our immune system. For example, sugar is a huge suppressant. Flour is a huge suppressant. That's why we see your obesity rates being connected to COVID and death rates being connected to obesity and COVID. And when you eat those foods, your immune system goes down. But there's, for example, if you're eating pancakes from, you know, white flour, it's going to have all these hostile negative effects on your metabolism, on your immune system. But if you have, for example, have in my book, The Vegan Diet, I have a great recipe called chai pancakes. And the chai pancakes are made with buckwheat flour and almond flour. Now, you can make it with regular buckwheat flour, but I've made it with an upgraded buckwheat flour, which is from the Himalayas, called Himalayan tartary buckwheat, which my friend Jeff Bland introduced to me, that is one of the most powerful superfoods on the planet. and is grown in really harsh conditions. It makes the phytochemicals really abundant in the flower, in the plant, in the buckwheat. And these phytochemicals, turns out, are some of the most powerful immune rejuvenating compounds on the planet. And so it actually rejuvenates your immune system. It kills the zombie cells. It helps reduce inflammation and helps even fight COVID. And it also has much higher protein level and much higher levels of these phytochemicals, as well as other nutrients. And so you can have pancakes from one flour or from another flour, exact same pancakes, it's that amount of flour, but the information is so different in each of the different flours.
It's what it's made of. If you're basically upgrading people's software. If food is information, you're saying we can all upgrade our software and live a better life. You talk about the seven systems of functional medicine. How does food impact each?
Well, this is sort of what we were talking about, right? So we talked about the microbiome and polyphenols. We talked about the phytochemicals for example, the Himalayan buckwheat that has an effect on your immune system. We can talk about, for example, the cruciferous vegetable family that's with broccoli, collards, and kale. Those upregulate all the pathways in your liver to help you detoxify, helps build glutathione, which is the most important detoxifier in the body. So by eating more of these foods, you can improve this. For example, if you have foods with these cruciferous vegetables, it has a compound called indole-3 carbinol in it, which helps to regulate female hormones and prevent cervical cancer. So there's all sorts of this stuff in there that regulates hormones, mitochondria, detoxification, and your gut, your immune system. And I go through in the book, you know, how each of these systems in the body that really regulate everything. So our whole idea of medicine is so screwed up. We have all these diseases. We have 155,000 diseases. We label people according to symptoms and where the thing is in their body instead of the root cause or instead of the mechanism. So functional medicine says, well, there's only seven real systems in the body that are all interacting. You don't have to worry about all these other diseases. If you just get these systems in balance, you're going to get healthy. And food is the biggest regulator of them, right? It regulates your immune system, your digestive system, your detox system, your mitochondria, everything. So it's really a powerful model for thinking about what you're eating every day. How do I eat to enhance the function of these systems that determine my health? So when I go to the grocery store, I'm like, ooh, let me buy that jicama because I know that's a prebiotic and that's going to fertilize my gut bacteria. Oh, let me buy that broccoli because I know it's going to upregulate glutathione and I know I have a gene that makes me hard to detoxify. Oh, maybe I'm going to eat those flax seeds because they have lignans in them that it can help regulate my hormones and help also improve my overall metabolism. Or I'm going to have an artichoke because it's got both things that help me detoxify as well as the prebiotic fibers. So I think all the time when I'm going to the grocery store, how do I eat my medicine and how do I find the drugs when I'm going shopping in the grocery store?
I love it. You're eating to prevent disease and what we have seen.
No. I mean, not really. No. I'm eating to optimize my health.
It's even better than preventing disease.
So the whole idea of functional medicine is not to treat disease or even to prevent disease. The idea is how do you enhance your body's function, hence the word functional medicine, and how do you optimize that function to create health? So it's really the science of creating health. I don't really treat disease.
So how do we create health when it comes to people who fight insulin resistance? And how do we optimize to fight viruses like COVID-19?
Yeah, well, those are two big questions there. I'll start with one. Insulin resistance, so people don't know what that is. It's basically what happens when you eat too much starch and sugar, your body starts jacking up your blood sugar, then your insulin starts going up, and then your body's like, whoa, it's too much insulin, and starts resisting the effects of the insulin, then you need more insulin. And the consequences of too much insulin are you store belly fat, you lock the fat in the fat cell, so it can get in, but it can't get out. So you can't actually release the fat. It's called lipolysis, which means the breaking down of fat. You can't do that if you have high insulin. It slows your metabolism, and it makes you hungry. So it's like a quadruple whammy against your metabolism, which is why 88% of Americans are metabolic and healthy. That means 12% of people in America are healthy. 88% have some form of prediabetes or diabetes or poor blood sugar control, which causes high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and high cholesterol, all of which are caused by this starch and sugar. So that is the single biggest thing we can do is get rid of the starch and sugar in processed food. And two, add foods that help improve our metabolism, which is good fats like nuts and seeds, avocados, olive oil, lots of good quality protein, and lots of fresh fruits and vegetables with phytochemicals. All those are so important. So we can easily fix it. I've seen people with type 2 diabetes they've had for years. And within a few days, they're off the insulin. Within a few months, they're completely reversed and off their medication.
Would you say the vegan diet's the way to get there?
I would say so, yeah. But you know, again, the whole thing is the vegan diet isn't one thing. It's a set of principles that is not restrictive and prohibitive. It's inclusive. And the idea is when you're choosing any kind of food, how do you pick the best quality of that food? If you're eating meat, is it feedlot meat or regenerative meat? If you're eating dairy, is it heirloom A2 cows or sheep or goat, which have A2 casein and they're grass-fed? Or is it the inflammatory, hormone-laden A1 casein Holstein cow milk? Still milk is very different in the information. Are you eating white flour? Or are you eating Himalayan tartary buckwheat flour? Right. So I think we every area of food, whether it's grains or beans or nuts or seeds or fruit or protein or dairy, there is a way to understand the quality of that food. And quality is the thing that matters more than anything else. And the information in the food we're eating is the critical idea here. The quality information is what regulates everything. So I think it's certainly a way of thinking about how to eat that's flexible. And depending on what your needs are, you might want to be a vegan or you might want to be eating a little bit differently, and you then have to see what happens. So I always say, don't let your ideology trample over your biology, right? If you think you should be a vegan, but you feel like crap on it, well, your body's telling you something. Listen to your body, right? Pay attention to how you feel. That's the most important indicator of what you should be doing. And then, of course, there's lab tests, and I have a whole section on leveraging personalized nutrition for optimal health in the book. So it's a great set of principles that aren't dogmatic, but they're guidelines.
I love diagnostic testing and getting that, working with the functional MDs when I have clients with them and seeing things like nutrient deficiencies, where their genetics are. How do you use it in your practice? I know you just mentioned if someone's vegan, but they feel bad, what are things that you may be looking for on diagnostic tests?
Well, I think, you know, when I look at personalized nutrition, again, I have a whole section there on that. And the first thing is history. You know, we talk about, you know, what is your medical history and what is your family history, right? So if your family history of diabetes and obesity and all these issues, then you're likely probably going to have a problem with blood sugar and insulin. And then we start looking at regular lab tests, your blood sugar. We also check insulin, which most doctors don't do. We look at particle number and size of cholesterol, which is a much better indicator than just regular cholesterol tests. We look at your nutritional status. You know, I did a bunch of tests on a patient who was a vegan, high sugar vegan. She ate a lot of vegetables, but still tons of sugar. And she didn't like protein. She didn't even eat tofu or tempeh or anything else. So it turned out she was severely protein malnourished. She had severe B12 deficiency, severe vitamin D deficiency, severe folate deficiency. And she was like, she was this young girl. I was like, wow. So I think, for her, it really wasn't the right approach. And she needed to have a diet that included, more balanced combination of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And so I see sort of massive need for personalization. So for her, I was able to do these tests and see what was abnormal. Then I could customize her diet and I could customize her supplements. And then we'll look at, for example, genetics. We might look at genetics and look at what genes you have related to various nutrient intake. And 1/3 of your entire DNA codes for enzymes, which all require the right nutrients to run properly. So we'll look at that in its way of customization. We'll also look at food sensitivity testing. Do you have food sensitivities or food allergies? You can customize it that way. So there's a lot of ways that we use testing to customize and leverage personalized nutrition. But it's where we are now is probably the dark ages compared to where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years with understanding of genetic testing, metabolism testing, nutrient testing. It's going to be radically changing.
Yeah, I definitely see health tech and access to our own biochemistry being the future. I currently use the Levels app, continuous glucose monitor, and that's mm-hmm. always mm-hmm. so supportive of understanding blood sugar balance. And what's the connection between food and our chances of fighting off a virus like COVID-19?
It's so important. And what's really discouraged me, Kelly, is the ways in which people have sort of used this is an excuse to indulge and to eat comfort foods and gain weight. They're calling it the quarantine 15 or the COVID-19 pounds that people are gaining. And the problem is that we're seeing, food-related chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, obesity, increasing your risk dramatically of getting sick from COVID, of being in the hospital, of being in the ICU, and even dying. Now, for example, hospitalizations were 6 times higher and deaths were 12 times higher with those who had an underlying reported issue such as high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, all food related. Think about that, 12 times higher risk of dying. Okay. Yeah. That should get you off your cookies. Right. And so our metabolic health, it's so poor, as I mentioned, which is 12% are healthy, has put us in a situation where we're sitting ducks, and that our need to re-up on the quality of our diet is now more important than ever. And that your immunity is so controlled by what you eat. So getting off the sugar and starch, eating more whole foods, lots of phytochemicals. And I wrote a blog called drhyman.com/C19, where I talked about all the foods and the things that have antiviral properties, that have immune regulating properties. And of course, then there's the nutrients you need to take. So food plays a huge role. And now is time more than ever to learn how to cook and to eat real food. And I that's the encouraging phenomenon I've seen, is people are spending more time cooking and eating at home, which is awesome.
I love that. If someone's just thinking about getting healthy, obviously they want to pick the most nutrient dense foods that you're talking about. What are some things that they can start to do in their home to live a vegan lifestyle?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, do a fridge and a kitchen and a pantry biopsy. so, going to people's homes, I'm like, whoa, what is that in there? You've got this peanut butter with trans fat and high fructose corn syrup, and why are you eating that? Why don't you get real peanut butter? Or, you know, so you go through and see what you shouldn't have in there, and just purge your kitchen from everything that isn't going to promote health. I mean, there isn't anything in my kitchen. Even though there's maple syrup, you know, it's still maple syrup, real food. I don't have any ingredients in there that are going to hurt me. Of course, maple syrup, if I drank it all day, it would hurt me. But, yeah. But part of a regular diet is fine. So it's so critical to start that way. And the second thing is, you know, start to learn about different ingredients and foods that you can sort of experiment with. And there's recipes in the book. I've written Food, What Heck Should I Cook? Cookbook, which is a really wonderful guide on how to include some of these vegan idea recipes into your lifestyle and diet. And then you know, really double down on just focusing on how to construct a plate, which is should be mostly vegetables and, you know, some protein, lots of good fats. And then you can sort of add in accoutrements like nuts and seeds and some fruit and berries. It's pretty simple. You know, honestly, I'm embarrassed actually how simple it is to eat well and how people just don't understand. And the problem is that it's, you know, our culture is so dominant with all the bad stuff. So it's so easy to do the wrong thing and so hard to do the right thing.
Even just like working with clients personally, most of the meals that I cook for my family are simply protein and veggies. It's a sheet pan dinner. It's, you know, a steamed dinner. And I think we want it to be really fun. We want that, you just talked about it, that emotional connection to food, the dopamine hit of having something that's really delicious, thinking that it's almost like a celebration with food, and it can be detrimental for sure. You talk about in your book, though, that food and mood are interconnected. And since everyone's had to combat depression and anxiety and stress of the pandemic and issues that they maybe were dealing with personally in their family, what should we know about how food and mood are interconnected?
There's enough to make us depressed in the world without having to compound it by eating bad food. and the truth is that, you know, there are real stresses and real tragedies and things that do affect our mood. But the majority of mental health issues, I believe, can be dramatically improved by improving the quality of diet. And this is not my opinion. There's now departments of metabolic psychiatry at Stanford, looking at how sugar and starch and processed foods cause depression and mental illness. There are studies at Harvard where they're looking at the microbiome. There's a whole department of nutritional psychiatry there. This is starting to become more mainstream. There's large clinical trials looking at diet and mood and showing that, you know, improving and upgrading the quality of diet can dramatically improve mood as equivalent to any medication or better. And we know that our nutrient-depleted diet is not providing the brain with the things it needs for a happy mood. And that sugar and starch cause depression. We know that omega-3 fats and vitamin D and magnesium and the B vitamins all help fight depression. So there's a lot of ways to upgrade the quality of your diet to deal with your mood. And I wrote a book almost a decade and a half ago called The Ultra Mind Solution, where I had a chapter in there called The Accidental Psychiatrist. Because what I was noticing is that as I was treating my patients for all these physical problems like autoimmune disease or digestive problems or whatever, that their mood would get better. Dr. Ryan, my panic attacks are gone. My depression's gone. My bipolar disease is better. Oh, my ADD is gone. I'm like, whoa, what happened here? And it was really bizarre because back then no one was talking about it. But I just was alert to what my patients were telling me. And I was like, well, if this is true, what does this mean? I started digging in the research and I started to find that there was evidence. And then now there's, 15 years later, there's massive amounts of evidence. So I think understanding that's really key. And it's not just mood, it's behavior. We see this huge divisiveness now in our society and conflict. And we saw it with the red and blue states. We see it, with black and white. And it's just like, it's so much division and hostility. And it turns out that our diet plays a huge role in that. And according to some large trials where they looked at in prisons, for example, where they upgraded the prisoners' diet, they were able to reduce violent crime in prisons by 56%. Look at juvenile detention centers. They take these kids and get off the crap and put them on real food. And there was a 91% reduction in violent behavior, such as oppositional behavior and violence, and the need for restraints was dropped by 75%. Suicide rates in these teenage boys were dropped by 100%. Now, Kelly, imagine if there was a drug that could cut suicide by 100% in the vulnerable population. And by the way, suicide is a third leading cause of death in this age group. Okay, so imagine that. But it's just food. And yet we don't really address it. I was talking to a friend from Japan. They said, in Japan, the prisons, they're really strict about what they feed them there. And they don't have processed food. They have, miso soup and brown rice, and they get these people grounded. I said, why are Japanese kids all so well-behaved? Like, why? We see these American kids are screaming, they're yelling, adults are talking, the kids are screaming, interrupting. I'm like, what is going on here? It's terrible. She said, well, in Japan, she thinks when the kids are eating all this yummy food, that's real food, and it's grounding, and it's nourishing, and it's nutrient dense, and it's got a lot of tradition behind it. Maybe that's why. But it's such a huge thing. And then whether it's ADD or autism or bipolar disease, even schizophrenia can be related to diet. So I think we really need to double down on the role of food in our mental health in this country and understand it's an enormous pathway to get people better.
Absolutely. And that resonates so deeply with me as a mom of a toddler. I know how Sebastian reacts to the food that he's fed. And I love that in this book, you touch on that. What should we be feeding our children?
Well, there's, in the book, I try to make it really useful. So it's not only what to eat, what dairy to eat or what grains to eat or what meat to eat. It's also the similar stuff that people struggle with. What do I feed my kid? How do I make it affordable? How do I eat for better mood? How do I eat for longevity or my gut health? And there are all these principles in there. And the thing about the kids is you got to start early. I mean, I'm pretty strict about it. I mean, my home is a safe zone. So like I did the fridge purge and the biopsy, all that. My son was like, Dad, when he was a teenager, I want to invite kids over for hanging out. And I'm like, there's no food in the house. I'm like, well, there's a lot of food. There's no food. You want to feed your friends. So I said, okay, let's go to the grocery store. So you can buy anything you want. One condition. It can have no trans fat. No trans fat. He really couldn't find anything. Like he couldn't find pizzas and everything was just full of crap. So the goal for me is, make the home a safe zone and include only nourishing whole real foods. Do fun stuff with your kids. Start a garden. Have them plant the seeds. Have them grow the vegetables. My daughter, when she was like three, we had a big garden and we grew Brussels sprouts and she like was so excited. She literally binged on Brussels sprouts to the point where she threw up and was puking the Brussels sprouts because she ate so many Brussels sprouts. And get them in the kitchen cooking with you. I had a little boy and I put him on Instagram the other day. It was 3 years old and we made these Himalayan pancakes that I was telling you about, right? And so these chai pancakes, and they're so good. And he was like so excited about cooking them and then eating them. And it's like, so you get kids involved in the process and make sure you have family dinners, get kids in the kitchen and just do it by example. I think that's really important. And then educate them and show them movies and things like Fed Up, which I was in, and other movies that teach people about what they're eating and the effects on them. So it's really a process of education. It's a process of example. And I think it's really doable.
Oh, definitely. And I think anytime that we take Sebastian to Tanaka Farms, which is the little farm where he can pick, he will eat that veggie that he picked at home, no matter what, every single time. So let's go into your thoughts on the therapeutic diets out there, like the ketogenic diet, autoimmune paleo. How are they different from the vegan diet?
Well, the vegan diet is inclusive of all that, right? So it's not a set thing to eat. It's a set of principles. And one of the key principles is personalization, which we talked about. And depending on what your health conditions are, you need to personalize the diet. If you have an autoimmune disease, you want to get rid of things that potentially cause inflammation. So there's a diet out there called autoimmune paleo, which is similar to the 10-day reset in the book, but also eliminates not only gluten, dairy, grains, and beans, but also eliminates nightshades, eggs, and nuts and seeds. So that it's just customized. If you're, for example, a diabetic who's been on insulin for 10 years, you might need to be super extreme and eat a very low carbohydrate diet. And you might need to even be keto. If you're someone who's, you know, doing a lot of athletics, you might need to increase certain amounts of protein or other things you're eating. So there's a customization and personalization that happens that is so important. And people, you know, can eat therapeutic diets. And that's all the point is understand how to treat disease with food. And so when I prescribe drugs, there's lots of drugs, right? I get to get my prescription pad and prescribe drugs for anything. And it's generally specific to what people are suffering from. Same thing with food. You know, I have an enormous palette of food that I can work with as drugs to help my patients do better. So if I'm working on their microbiome, I'm going to make sure they're getting prebiotic foods. I'm going to try having asparagus and jicama and artichoke and seaweed and all this stuff, and maybe just some artichokes. I'm going to make sure they're eating probiotic foods and having sauerkraut and kimchi and tempeh. I want to make sure that they're having certain polyphenols, which I know the bugs love in their gut. Maybe they're having cranberry, green tea, and pomegranate. So I'm literally prescribing these things as medicines. And when you do that in a coherent way, people have so many amazing results and get better.
I love it. Walk me through a day in the life of you so we can see all of these upgraded foods from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. What are some examples?
Okay. So let's just take yesterday. So yesterday, you know, my new routine here, I'm in Hawaii. My routine here is I work out in the morning and then I make a protein shake because I'm 61 years old and I want to make sure I'm maintaining my muscle mass. I'm making sure I get my good. And I have basically a protein shake, which is essentially using my Pegan protein powder, which is really yummy. It's basically pumpkin seed protein, organic pea protein and grass-fed collagen, plus MCT oil and a prebiotic fiber. No sugar at all, high protein, fat, and fiber. I might add a little bit of goat whey to that because I want to build muscle, so I need extra protein. And then I'll throw in a bunch of polyphenols. I'll throw in turmeric, I'll squirt turmeric. I'll throw in green tea powder, pomegranate, cranberry. I'll put in some other things like probiotics. I might throw in some mitochondrial supportive things that I like to put in there, like something called MitoPure. So I kind of upgrade my whole cocktail. Maybe I throw in some frozen berries. Maybe I have a little MCT oil, especially if I'm going for a long bike ride. I want to kind of jack up my mitochondria. I'll throw in a tablespoon or two of MCT oil. And I use macadamia nut milk. So I have this delicious smoothie in the morning that keeps me going. And I sometimes even want a lunch if I have that. And then, you know, lunch is usually something easy. I might grab a can of sardines and some salad. I often use a lot of things that are fatty in my salad. So olives and avocados and pumpkin seeds and olive oil. So the fat keeps me satiated. And you can get a little extra protein with a can of wild salmon or sardines or whatever you want. And dinner is usually pretty simple. Like last night was a great example. Last night we had some delicious scallops just sort of seared in the pan. That was a side dish. So the protein is a side dish. And then... I like four vegetable dishes. So vegetables take the main seat. So I had these incredible mushrooms that are trumpet mushrooms that I sliced in and sauteed with a little bit of olive oil, garlic, salt and pepper, ghee. Just unbelievably delicious. I had these Chinese long string beans I made with ginger and mirin and umami vinegar sauteed in the pan, the avocado oil. And then I had a giant salad with sunflower sprouts, watercress, which I know is very detoxifying. I use kohlrabi, which also has cruciferous vegetables that are crunch in it, and maybe jicama and some tomatoes, the olive oil vinegar dressing. And then we had an additional Japanese sweet potatoes. Kind of mashed Japanese sweet potatoes with little ghee and coconut. So it was really yummy. And I had four vegetable dishes and, you know, that was it. And maybe a little piece of chocolate at the end. So it was really pretty simple. We made the whole dinner in 30 minutes, just like that. Doesn't take a long time. And if you pay attention to sort of simple cooking and include all these foods, it's so easy.
Well, I'm curious, what about coffee, caffeine, alcohol? How does that play into your life?
Yeah. I really love coffee, but I don't think it loves me as much. I don't think it loves me as much as I love it. So I noticed when I sort of experiment, I did a 6-week, you know, kind of just like getting off of coffee, alcohol, sugar, dairy, gluten, you know, just a really kind of, I'm pretty good most of all the time, but like, I would say it's probably 10 to 20% of my diet is some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just got rid of all of it. I noticed I was sleeping better. I had more energy. I wasn't tired in the afternoon. So I was like, oh, that's probably a good indicator. Then I had other people can have coffee and be fine. Alcohol, same thing. I noticed when I drink alcohol, I don't sleep as well. I pay more attention to that. So maybe if I want something, I'll have it a little early in the night. I'll have one glass of tequila, maybe once every week or two. Like I don't really do it very often. And I think sugar is also considered a recreational treat. Now, if you're a diabetic and you're struggling with obesity and you're really struggling, you might need to be on a very low carbohydrate diet for a while to fix it all. And then you can become more metabolically resilient and actually be much healthier in the long run. So you have more metabolic degrees of freedom, meaning you can have, you know, like some chocolate or some, I mean, there's a company which makes Hugh chocolate.
Yeah, also I love that stuff.
Cookies, which I'm like, oh, I should be the cookies. But these are like tiny little cookies. They're made from cassava flour, cashew butter, and they have no sugar. And then they have a little date sweetener. So they're really delicious. And sure, you can have a few of those. It's different than eating like a Chips Ahoy cookie or an Oreo cookie, which are full of weird chemicals and trans fats and refined sugars and processed flours full of all kinds of nasty stuff. So I think you can still enjoy stuff, but you don't have to go crazy. For example, once in a while, like they have this vegan macadamia nut ice cream here on the island, which is like really, really good. I'll have a little bit of that once in a while. So I mean, I've been here for 4 months. I've had it twice, but I'm never going to have it. So, but I'm also riding my bike 2 hours a day and, you know, working out every day. And so it's like, I feel, you know, okay. But if you're in someone who's really struggling with issues or you're trying to get better or heal something, then you have to be a little more careful.
Right. There's a period of time where it's nice to strip things away and really understand how your body responds. I love that. If someone is listening to all the health news out there and they're hearing about intermittent fasting, how do you look at things like intermittent fasting as a tool, and how and when would you suggest that to a client who wanted to follow the vegan diet?
This trend of time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting, keto diets, fasting mimicking diets. So all those do similar things in the body. And here's essentially what they do. They give the body a stress, which helps it work better. And for example, if you lift weights, you know, you're going to be tearing muscle fibers, but then your muscles will build back stronger, or as Biden says, build back better, or something like that. So that's the idea, is that by creating a stress on the system, by restricting calories or time when you're eating and so forth, you can literally transform your biology very easily to upgrade your health. And what happens is you reduce inflammation, you increase your antioxidant systems, you increase stem cell production, you reduce body fat, you increase muscle mass, you increase cognitive function, you increase bone density. And these are all wonderful things. So you can achieve them through many different techniques. The best thing people need to do is, we call it time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting. Everybody should do that every day. It's called breakfast, right? It's like 12 hours is not difficult, right? If you eat dinner at 6, it means you can eat at 6 the next morning, right? If you finish dinner at 8, you can eat at 8 the next morning. The problem is we just keep eating all day and night, right? We just have nighttime snacks and all this crap. And it's such a drag that we are destroying our metabolism. So we need a break. So at least 12 hours, hopefully 14 and maybe 16. So if you eat dinner at 6 and you eat breakfast at 8 in the morning, that's a 14-hour fast. So it doesn't have to be complicated, right? I think it's important people understand to give your body a rest. And all those things are super powerful. And depending on what's going on with you, you might need to do one or the other. Keto is better for diabetics. You know, just time-restricted eating is good for everybody, but you can do it in a 12, 14, or 16-hour window. But it all is designed to help reset your biology and promote health.
I totally agree. I feel like people think, oh, if low carb is good, then no carb is great. If intermittent fasting is good, then I should be OMAD, eating one meal a day. And you're like, whoa, let's gain some benefit from just having a normal eating schedule, maybe circadian synced fasting, where you're eating with the sun.
Absolutely.
I love that you have a chapter on eating like a regenerarian or regenerative farming practices and focusing on regeneration and building up our planet for the health of everyone. Can you talk about some of the principles that you suggest for people when it comes to protecting our planet and taking care of it?
Yeah, for sure. And this is really important to understand that eating is not just a personal choice. It's an agricultural act. It's a political act. It's an economic act. It's an environmental act. It's a climate act. Okay, so we are really part of a big web, whether we like it or not. It's connecting us to everything that matters. And our choices do matter. And we can move the markets by what consumers do. So, you know, before, you know, there was that little food co-op in the 70s I used to go to with a dirt floor and everything in burlap bags. And, you know, tofu was in these big 5-gallon buckets and water. And that was what you got. Now, you know, you got Whole Foods and it's just part of the culture. And it's, you know, it's sort of all this stuff's become embedded in just tradition. It's just some more culture. And it's because consumers demanded it. And I think if we focus in on a way of eating that regenerates human health, by virtue of what I define that as, meaning eating real food, eating food that's grown in nutrient-dense soil, that's grown in animals that are raised in ways that actually produce more nutritious meat and so forth, you're naturally going to be doing things to help climate. It doesn't mean you should become a vegan, because I think everybody's sort of been told that the best way to solve climate change is becoming a vegan. Not necessarily. For example, if you're a vegan and you make a lot of vegetable scraps and you're throwing them in the garbage instead of the compost, they're ending up in the landfill and producing 3 times as much methane as cow burps and farts, right? So 3 times as much. So you got to kind of put it all in perspective and understand that the key should be thinking about how do we eat as a vegetarian, which means trying to choose foods that are grown in ways that are regenerating both human health and planetary health. And that's foods that are grown in methods of regenerative agriculture. And what is that? It means you don't till the soil and disturb the soil, which causes soil erosion, that you cover the land all the time. You don't leave these bare land all the time. So you have cover crops, and you crop rotations to put different nutrients in the soil. You move animals around in a specific way to actually put in the fertilizer from their poop and pee and their saliva, that you actually leave, you know, roots in the ground and you don't dig them all up. So it's really simple principles that it's important for the context of where you're doing this. There's a group called the Soil Health Academy that is teaching farmers all around the country on how to actually change their practices. Companies like General Mills and Danone are now paying for farmers to learn how to do this and paying these guys to convert to regenerative agriculture. There's a regenerative organic certification that's emerging. So we'll be able to understand where more food comes. You can buy directly from the ranchers for many, many online programs, whether it's Belcampo Meats or whether it's Mariposa Ranch. You can get, if you get a cow share with somebody, maybe you have a bunch of friends, get a grass-fed cow, you can buy half a cow. I bought a half a lamb at the farmer's market from a local farmer and put it in the freezer. You can get a half a cow, chop it up, and per pound of regenerative grass-finished beef is less per serving than a McDonald's hamburger. Right? If you buy direct from the farmer, you can get community support of agriculture in your local community. Go to farmers markets. You can actually start to have your own garden, grow your own food. You can have a compost pile. There's a lot of things you do, and it's all in the book on how do you actually become a vegetarian and start to move your own health, move planetary health, and move the markets.
I love it so much. I love that you mentioned Anya and Belcampo. That's where we get our protein. And it's so nice to be able to support companies like that and farmers like that are really changing the way that other farmers do the work that they're doing. So we can all vote with our pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Vote with our fork.
Yeah, vote with our fork. Mark, this was so fun. Thank you so much for being here and for writing your 18th book, The Vegan Diet. This is probably my favorite. I love a light structure that allows people to personalize it for themselves and so many actionable principles in this book. So if people aren't following you, I wonder what rock they're living under. But if they are, where can they find you? Where can they grab this book? Where can they follow along?
Well, they can go to vegandiet.com and there's a lot of bonus material on there and videos and great content. And then they can go to drhyman.com and learn more about all of what I do, my podcast, Doctor's Pharmacy. On social media, it's Dr. Mark Hyman. And just stay connected. There's a lot of great content all the time that we're putting out, longevity series. Dr. Hyman Plus, which is our new subscription service, which is pretty awesome, where people can get free access to a lot of our content, the documentary series. You can do an Ask Me Anything where you get to talk to me every month. And my colleagues at my Ultra Wellness Center also do deep dives on functional medicine, and we get ad-free podcasts. So it's a great service.
I love it so much. We'll make sure that all of those are in the show notes and linked for everyone to find. Thank you for being here, for your time.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me. Okay.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day, They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.